Back in December, America watched as India suffered from a highly transmissible COVID-19 strain. We now know that to be the Delta variant. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dara Kennedy. A Public Health England recent report revealed that over 90% of their new cases in the UK are of the Delta variant, making it more dominant than last year's strain. According to the CDC, the Delta variant has accounted for over 50% of new cases in our country. To put that in perspective, that is up from the June 19th report of 30% of new cases. So you may ask, why does this matter? You're vaccinated, the weather is hot, people are moving around outdoors freely. Is there cause for concern in your community?
I'm Maya Schwader. According to Dr. Matilda Castile, there is definitely cause for concern. Dr. Castile is the Commissioner of Health and Human Services for the City of Worcester. This new variant is far more contagious than the previous types of this virus we've seen, and overall right now, Worcester has about a 60% vaccination rate. But those numbers are much lower for the Black and Latinx communities, and Dr. Castile said this is what concerns her the most.
We're incredibly worried about the Delta variant. I'm incredibly nervous about the people who are not vaccinated with this variant. And for us, that means the majority of, we only have about a third of the population of both the Black and Latinos that have been fully vaccinated. In comparison, when we talk about the white community here in Worcester, that 54% have been fully vaccinated. And the Asian community is also doing pretty well at 53.5%. percent fully vaccinated. And the Black fully vaccinated, like I said, it's around a third, a little less than a third, 32.2% of the Black population. And Latinos are 31.5% of the population. So, you know, in comparison, Latinos and the Black community certainly need to be vaccinated. And it's tough. It is incredibly transmissible and truly higher effects for people getting this virus. And, we said initially that 10%, 10 to 20% of the variant that is in Worcester now is Delta. And we think that in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be 100%. And so just incredibly nervous for our community and really frustrating when people, as just happened today, who didn't want to get the vaccine. One was in particular was because, you know, both the entire family was not vaccinated because they don't have time to do it. They're working. And I've given him, you know, plenty of places to go when he finishes work, and it's just not on their radar to do. So he didn't end up going. And one of them is somebody who's in the health field who actually says not enough people have been tested on this when they did the trial, so it still has emergency use. And I'm like, 44,000 people went on the Pfizer trial. I was one of them. How can we say that that's not enough people that this was done, that the trial was done on? It's frustrating because I worry that they're going to get COVID and they don't quite understand what's going to happen to them, whether they get the long hauler syndrome, whether there's some who I know who haven't had smell or taste for 8 months. I mean, symptoms can go on for a while. And, you know, let alone being hospitalized and death is certainly possibilities. But even just getting it and making it, still there are long-term effects that can happen. So I worry about that.
Is there a fear that if not enough people get vaccinated, that the vaccine might cease to be effective against the Delta variant?
You know, right now, from what we know, that it's about 90% effective compared to, you know, it's noted to be 95% efficacious against all coronavirus. But when you come to the Delta virus, we drop some, which is still significantly good. But yes, I think that, again, if people aren't vaccinated, this Delta variant can convert into a different variant, and we could have other variants coming up because the virus still has hosts that they can continue to replicate. So it is concerning. I know in certain parts of this country, the numbers are beginning to increase. I think there was a 5% increase across the country, and so it is worrisome. And you know, the fact that we opened up early, or at least I could say that we opened up, people think that we're okay, that everything is fine. And so, you know, the reality is that we're not okay. We're okay for people who are vaccinated. We're not okay for people who are not vaccinated. And with this Delta variant, if you're not vaccinated, it is truly a problem. And so the last thing that we want to see is go back to any type of quarantine. Now the World Health Organization says that we should all be wearing masks. CDC doesn't say that now, but you know, again, everybody's thinking this process through of how do we deal with this Delta variant.
What do you think it says that the vaccination rates for the white and Asian populations in Worcester are comparatively high to those of the Black and Latinx communities?
At this point, I think, you know, I think our thought process was access. And at this point, I don't think it's access. I do think that it's, you know, you can go anywhere here besides us, besides UMass. You can go to any pharmacy and get the vaccine. The outreach has been tremendous that, you know, the state has funded so much outreach into our areas. They're sending buses, state buses, into our area to get people vaccinated. Incentives are available. So I don't think it's access anymore. I think it's hesitancy. So the Asian community and the white community has had obviously a lot less hesitancy than the Black and the Latino community. And so it's our job to be able to make people feel secure that this is a safe vaccine. And that is a process that we continue to work.
So Massachusetts has been doing well overall in terms of vaccine mm-hmm. rates. But as we've said, that's not true across the board.
It depends on your zip code, who does well and who does not. And so overall, Massachusetts, for example, has been one of the healthiest states in the country. We're either number one or number two. But then it depends on the zip code. So overall, it's the healthiest. But if you look at particular zip codes in Massachusetts, that's not the case. And so we have pockets of areas in Worcester that are certainly do not have equitable health care and equitable results with diseases.
Dr. Castile, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Last week, the World Health Organization urged even vaccinated people to wear masks indoors. It is a federal mandate for airlines through mid-September, and other cities and states are starting to amend their relaxed restrictions. However, there are no consistent rules in place for either the vaccinated or not. Yale Medicine updated a July 7th report that stated the Delta variant is spreading 50% faster, which is 50% more contagious than the original strain. Yale doctors also reported that 1 out of 8 cases in Connecticut are due to the Delta variant. In Massachusetts, a highly vaccinated state, the Delta variant was evident in fewer than 10% of cases over a 3-week period from May to June. And another thing, wanted to know how everyday people are feeling about this fast-growing presence of this more dangerous strain of COVID.
We spoke to several people in Springfield who said they've chosen not to get vaccinated. Jaceris Lopez said she had COVID-19 and believes that means she's now immune, but she might consider getting the vaccine down the road.
We're going to give it like a year, you know, at least, because we've been hearing too many stories. Someone, actually a close family friend, apparently can't walk ever since she got the COVID vaccine. Like, there's just been a bunch of crazy, crazy stories.
Orlando Lopez, who's 30 and no relation, also said he's holding off.
I don't trust the vaccine yet. It's too early, you know? It's way too early to know. I don't know if it's working.
Lopez said he has not heard of the Delta variant and that he does have friends who've gotten COVID-19.
Coming up, the executive director of the Public Health Institute of Western Massachusetts joins us to detail their strategy for transparent health equities in the state. You're listening to And Another Thing.
You're listening to New England Public Media. Remember those searches high and low for toilet paper, masks, and gloves? Businesses are now trying to avoid future shortages. Coming up on Marketplace, we'll discuss what post-pandemic supply chains might look like. That's ahead at 6:30, followed by Fresh Air at 7 and Jazz a la Mode at 8 on New England Public Media and on your smart speaker. And another thing on NEPM is funded by you. By Summerlin Floors, a certified woman-owned business with a variety of flooring options and specializing in green flooring alternatives. SummerlinFloors.com. And by Richard Bates, the British clockmaker in Yufane, Vermont, serving New England since 1957 in the professional restoration of antique clocks. TheBritishClockmaker.com. You're listening to New England Public Media.
Welcome back to the show. Today, we're looking at the new Delta variant of the coronavirus and specifically how certain communities across our region might be more heavily impacted than others. We spoke with Jessica Collins. She's the executive director of the Public Health Institute of Western Massachusetts. One of the goals of the Public Health Institute is to address health equity in the state. Ms. Collins told us that across the board, Black and Latinx people tend to get more sick more often, and the pandemic was a stark reminder of this.
When we disaggregate health indicators by race and ethnicity, we see a tremendous difference in health outcomes for people. So no, we were not surprised that during this pandemic, Black and Latinx communities were hit very hard.
How fast the Delta variant spreads and who will get it can simply depend on where you live. According to a Yale Medicine report, some low-vaccinated towns are adjacent to higher-vaccinated areas, and that can cause what they term hyper-local outbreaks. Jessica says they are working hand-in-hand for collaborative messaging across communities.
Everything that we've been trying to do, we are trying to do in collaboration with others, because it's extremely important, particularly in a pandemic, that messages are aligned, that there is repetition, that others are augmenting messages. So we've worked with different municipalities, different healthcare systems in our region. We also are working to listen better. So we have outreach workers and we are trying to listen to people that we are trying to encourage to get vaccinations. And so at this point, it's not an access issue so much as many people have made up their minds. And so now it's important that we listen and we try to understand why have they made up their minds and what might make them change their mind.
Getting the message out about COVID and the vaccines has involved massive campaigns, freebies from private companies, and even the state lottery launching the Vax Millions giveaway. We asked, do any of these programs help with health equity?
They don't address health equity. No. I mean, addressing health equity is about changing systems like, you know, healthcare or education or housing or criminal justice or the food system or financial, you know, systems that allow people to accumulate wealth. That is what will change health equity, when everyone has what they need to actually be healthy. And COVID-19 is just, it's just a terrible showing of what we've created in this country.
The World Health Organization data shows that less than 15% of the world is vaccinated. In America, according to the CDC's data tracker as of July 6th, nearly 158 million people in our country have been vaccinated, or 47.5%. New England is leading the way across the country, with Vermont first among all states, with 66% of residents vaccinated. Massachusetts is a close second with 62%, followed by Maine, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire rounding out the top six. With those positive numbers, it's no wonder that people have let their guards down this summer.
I think in the beginning, we all were making a difference. I think VaxForce was making a difference. I think as we got later into the spring, and, you know, there were lots of messages about opening up. There were lots of messages about, well, we're over the hump. And I think that that became confusing and people started to relax. And so I think groups like VaxForce or Public Health Institute and all the healthcare institutions and the state, quite frankly, need to just rethink what are the messages that need to be told.
Jessica Collins, Executive Director of the Public Health Institute of Western Massachusetts.
As we've heard today, how healthy you are can vary greatly by your zip code, by your race, and so many other factors. This was true before COVID, and it will probably be true after, but a small group of legislators have now introduced a bill to address just this. The Community Immunity Act is scheduled for a hearing before the Public Health Committee on Monday, June 12th. We spoke with State Senator Becca Rausch. She's one of the three co-sponsors of the bill. We asked her what it would do to address health equity outcomes.
The Community Immunity Act really does three critical things to safeguard and improve public health across the Commonwealth. The first thing is to make sure that we actually get complete data about vaccine rates in every corner of Massachusetts, which we don't have right now. We have only a roughly 80% complete data set. When you're talking about vaccines, 80% of a data set is really a woefully incomplete data set. So the first thing is we get complete data. The second thing is that we provide statutory infrastructure and support for the Department of Public Health to conduct education and outreach targeted at communities that may be at an elevated risk for the spread of a vaccine-preventable infectious disease or illness. And the third thing is that we standardize and centralize the vaccine requirements and the vaccine exemption processes within the Department of Public Health so that the experts in public health and our state agency responsible for public health is actually implementing public health protocols in schools and summer camps and colleges and daycare facilities.
You mentioned making immunization policies consistent across schools, across camps. That's not something that's in place right now?
No, it's not. Our current statutes on immunization are something of a hodgepodge. So we really need to take all of the various pieces that currently exist and make sure they are much more cohesive and streamlined and easy to follow. And because of the lack of strong infrastructure in our immunization statutes right now, we have wildly disparate implementation of infectious disease prevention protocols all around the state. And we've also put the burden of implementing all of those infectious disease prevention protocols on teachers and school administrators and early educators, daycare providers, summer camp counselors, right? That's not where this responsibility belongs. And in fact, some investigative reporting back in 2019 indicated that under-resourced schools sometimes just don't enforce it at all because they don't have the resources to do so. So that's part and parcel of why the American Federation of Teachers Massachusetts chapter has endorsed the bill, part of why the Massachusetts Association of Superintendents has endorsed the bill, and why we have the support of a dozen organizations dedicated specifically to the advancement of public health and medicine. So we have a real hole, a series of holes, frankly, in our current infectious disease prevention statutes and our infrastructure that just really hasn't been sufficiently created because the statutes just aren't there. We have a hole, and the Community Immunity Act will fix that hole, really create the infrastructure that we need.
Speaking about health outcomes in terms of health equity, do you anticipate that this would also help those communities of color, which tend to be more impacted by infectious diseases?
I do, because I think there's a disparate amount of access to information about vaccine availability and the fact that we have a vaccine trust fund that will cover all of the costs associated with getting vaccines and also disparate access to information about vaccine safety and efficacy. And I think we've seen that play out with regard to the COVID vaccine. So if ever there was a time to pass this bill, now is the time to do it.
You have mentioned that part of the impetus behind this bill was because of COVID, but this bill goes beyond just COVID, correct?
This bill, actually, I wrote and crafted and filed this bill long before COVID hit, long before PPE was a household term. This bill originated in large part because there was a measles outbreak when one of my children was less than a year old and unable to get a measles vaccine because he wasn't old enough. So as a parent, that's a scary spot to be in. I'm also a healthcare attorney. Before I was elected, I was in fact an attorney at UHHS. And so when I was elected, I said, hey, what actually is going on with regard to our immunization infrastructure and statutory law? And I looked it up and I found just a giant mess, just a complete mess. And I looked at it and I said, you know what? I can write this bill. We can fix this. And we are Massachusetts. We are highly regarded all across the nation and around the globe, frankly, as one of the leading states in one of the leading nations of the world with regard to healthcare. And here we are failing on immunization infrastructure. And we are seeing the failures of that infrastructure, the absence of that infrastructure play out right before our eyes. So this bill might pertain to a COVID vaccine in the future if the Department of Public Health puts a COVID vaccine on the list of vaccinations. But this bill predates COVID, but certainly applies to COVID. And I will also add that one of the most frequent questions about the legislation when it was filed last session was, why now? Why do we need this bill now? And we had lots of examples back in 2019 about measles and polio and STIs that have vaccines that can be prevented and all sorts of outbreaks that have occurred in the last several years. And then COVID hit. So there should be no question in anyone's mind about why this immunization infrastructure bill, the Community Immunity Act, is so important and so vital to protecting and advancing public health from Stockbridge to Boston and from Lawrence to the Cape.
There are always going to be people who just don't want to get vaccinated or get their kids vaccinated, whether it be for religious reasons or health reasons or whatever reason they may have. What would you say to them when it comes to what this bill would may or may not require them to do?
I would encourage them to read the bill carefully, to understand that this bill, there's a lot of misinformation being spread about, and frankly, a lot of confusion, because there are several bills that have been filed about vaccines, perhaps unsurprisingly, given that we are still in a global pandemic. But the Community Immunity Act does not mandate vaccines. It does not strike the religious exemption, nor does it put any subjective review of vaccine exemptions in the hands of the Department of Public Health or the government. So this bill is really, truly an infrastructure bill. And if a parent wants to continue to not vaccinate their children, this bill would not change that.
Senator Rausch, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Join the conversation. Reach us at 800-639-9120. I'm Dara Kennedy. Thanks for joining us today.
You can follow us on social media. We are at Hello and Another, or email us at andanotherthing@nepm.org. I'm Maya Schwader. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.